Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Every single day, reality calls, and the Biden administration just hangs up.
I don't care what corporate media outlets say. I don't care what Hollywood says. I don't care what big corporations say.
Mark Reardon.
Can you provide a definition for the word woman?
All I ask is that you're a woman.
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
I can't.
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
Hey, hey, good afternoon, St. Louis. How you doing? It's been a while. Joe Beamer with you in for Mark Reardon on this Tuesday, beautiful Tuesday, here on 97.1 FM Talk. Hope you're having a great, well, it's not start to your day. It's kind of winding down the day, but however it's going, hope you're having a great start. We've got a great show planned for you. It's been a while. Since I've been on the airwaves here in St. Louis. And let me tell you, it's great to be back. Great to be on with you. We've got, as I said, a packed show for you, starting with our friend Brad Young in the next segment, talking about the decision today by the judge in New York, Judge Merchan, moving the request and the sentencing till next Tuesday. How that all plays out and just how all of this stuff plays out with the legal troubles that were for the president-elect who will be taking office in less than 70 days. Now, I know it's been a week since Election Day, and on my show in Buffalo today, we were looking back on this last week. It does seem like yesterday that Trump won and was elected to another term, but just looking back, and I heard in the last hour they were talking about the social media meltdowns. And I heard Annie Fry say something that I was talking about earlier today as well. I don't understand the people who are filming their meltdowns. And we're seeing this. I mean, we're seeing it on cable news, which I guess was predicted because we all remember 2016. But the people who are filming their meltdowns on TikTok, like, hey, I'm going to cut my hair. I'm shaving my hair off because Donald Trump won, and I'm going to film it on TikTok. Or the people who are in the driver's seat of their car, I hope they're not driving, and they're just having an absolute meltdown on TikTok, and they film it. Now, I'm not an overly emotional person. I'm going to be honest with you. I can't imagine thinking, again, just being so tone deaf and thinking, well, this is a good idea. I'm going to film this absolute breakdown and put it on TikTok, put it on social media. Maybe that's just the world we live in. I remember a few of these meltdowns during 2016, but nothing like this. And it's just so spread out. It's just so spread out compared to it's just everywhere. And it's really not stopping in the last week. So I was happy to hear them talking about that last hour. Cause like I said, it was, it came up on my show, in Buffalo today. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to take for the mainstream media. Like, I really thought they would see the results of this act. Now, I didn't think MSNBC was going to wake up, right? I didn't think Rachel Maddow all of a sudden was going to stop with the buzzwords. But I am surprised overall, like the people at CNN and a lot of the people in the network news, like they're not realizing Donald Trump didn't just win the electoral vote. He won the popular vote. Republicans took over the Senate. They're most likely going to take the House. And they're still going with these buzzwords, racist, sexist, even though Trump improved in almost every demographic. I think the only demographic he didn't improve in is college-educated, unmarried women. I think that was the only category he did not improve in. But he improved with every demographic, and they're still with these buzzwords. That Alan Lichtman, that professor with his stupid keys, I'm sorry, I've always thought the guy was a joke. He had his keys and, you know, it's going to be Kamala Harris. I've only been wrong once. The guy clearly let his emotions play part of that, right? Well, he was on with Chris Cuomo yesterday on News Nation. And what's he doing? It's not the keys that failed, his stupid keys. No. It's everyone's a sexist, everyone's a racist, everyone's a bigot. And like, okay, 2016, you were using those buzzwords when Hillary still won the popular vote, but Trump won the Electoral College. But when the popular vote and everything went to Trump, and you're still now you're going to say half the people who showed up to vote are racist, sexist, bigots. You're going to continue going with that. That's part of the reason Trump was reelected. Last night on Abby Phillips' show, talking about deportations. Scott Jennings was on. He's been an all-star the last year over on CNN. He's the one reason to watch CNN. He's on there talking about the deportations, and this is what Americans want. And the people, other people on the panel are saying it's controversial. Well, no. That's a big reason why Donald Trump was reelected, the economy and illegal immigration. And it's just it's amazing to me. I understand, you know, being on your team and being completely devoted to, you know, Democratic values. But you got to realize that, you know, there are a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump who don't even like the guy, but they hate the way this country's being run right now. And are we going to have to go through 4 years of the media, of these pundits, especially those on the left? And maybe I run into it more being in the blue state of New York. But just time and time again, getting called every name in the book. It's going to be a very interesting 4 years if they keep on going like this. You know, we hear about the autopsy, the campaign autopsy that the Harris people and the Democratic Party is going to run. Well, if your autopsy concludes that people are just racist and sexist, let me tell you, you didn't learn anything. If for 4 years we're going to have the meltdowns on cable news and everyone's going to yell at Scott when he makes a point on the primetime on CNN, then the Democrats haven't learned their lesson, which, you know, I'm on the other side saying, fine, continue beating this drum. I'm also an American, and I think, you know, it is good for America to have a competitive political landscape. But, you know, some of these issues that the Democrats keep on putting out there that are just, they just turn people off. The lawfare against Trump turned people off. The social issues, the doubling down on biological men in women's sports. I'm not saying that's a huge percentage of why people switched from Biden last time to Trump this time. But, you know, if 1 or 2% of people were so turned away by that, that's enough to be pretty big in this election. And then when another conservative panelist on CNN is bringing that up and he's just shut down by the ultra lib on the other side of the table. And that is the problem. That is the problem the Democratic Party has. You have the far left that will not let go. And they have felt like they've been in control for the last 4 years. The Republican Party, on the other hand, has actually moderated on a few topics, a few issues. And I think that's what's making, I think Trump has a part to do with it. I think Biden just being an awful president had something to do with it. But this shift to Trump that we saw over 4 years has a lot to do with the economy, illegal immigration, And I think people are just sick of all the focus on the social issues while more and more Americans are.
Hey, welcome back. Joe Beamer with you. Some technical issues, if you couldn't tell, but it's great to be back with you here on 97.1 FM Talk. And we are joined by our legal analyst. He's also a partner with Harris Dow Fisher and Young, Brad Young. Brad, long time no talk. How you doing?
Joe, I'm doing great, sir. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk with you. And again, Brad, as so many things we have talked about has to do with now President-elect Donald Trump and his New York case that was supposed to get a conclusion today, but that is put on hold. Brad, what happened this afternoon?
Well, let me talk exactly what happened, and then I'll throw in my analysis of what occurred. Today was the deadline for Judge Mershon to reach a decision as to whether or not the case against Trump should be dismissed in light of the fact that he is now the president-elect. Instead of reaching a decision, Judge Mershon punted on this and essentially said, I'm going to give the parties another week or two to file briefs, and then we'll revisit this issue later in November. So that's really the only thing that actually happened today. But Joe, I think this is concerning to some degree because we can read between the lines as to what was going to happen. I mean, for example, if the whole issue here is to whether or not Trump should be his sentencing hearing, whether he should be sentenced to prison or released on his own recognizance. There would be no issue from Judge Mershon's perspective today if he had already concluded that that Donald Trump was going to be released on his own recognizance. If that were the case, he could just have said, listen, the sentencing is I'm going to release him on his own recognizance, and then we will decide the issue of whether the case itself can move forward on appeal or whether a final decision can be made. The parties have weeks to do that. But he didn't do that, which means, at least in my mind, as I'm reading the tea leaves here, that he was intending to sentence Donald Trump for prison time for this atrocious case in the city of New York that holds virtually no legal merit, guaranteed to be reversed on appeal. But I believe that Judge Mershon was intending to sentence him to prison, which is
whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's why he had to punt a week or two in order to allow the parties to brief the issue.
So if Donald Trump had not been elected a week ago today, we could have seen him sentenced to how many days in prison do you think that would have been, Brad? I know it's purely hypothetical.
Well, at this point, he could have been sentenced to as much as 4 years in prison, which is ironic. Because some would see the presidency as being 4 years in prison. But jokes aside, he could have sentenced him to 4 years in prison. Now, here's the problem, the procedural problem. Until this sentencing issue gets resolved, an appeal cannot move forward because there's not technically a final award or a final judgment. So by kicking the can down the road a couple of weeks, instead of simply saying, let me rephrase it. If Judge Mershon today would have said, I'm releasing Donald Trump on his own recognizance, that's my sentencing, then boom, the appeal process could move forward. But by kicking the can down the road a couple of weeks, right now the sentencing issue isn't resolved. The appeal cannot move forward. So everything is just further delayed until the parties have an opportunity to file briefs with the court.
Now, that's the New York case. How does this all play out with his other federal cases now that he has been elected president for another term? Does that mean the people kind of acted as a jury, Brad?
Well, they really did, and here's exactly how that happens, Joe, and I think you already know this, but since the New York case is a state case, the federal government doesn't have jurisdiction. But the federal government, through and via Special Prosecutor Jack Smith, has been bringing the case in Florida and the case in Washington, D.C. Now, in those cases, Jack Smith has already signaled to the Department of Justice that he is going to be winding down his investigation with the intent to dismiss all charges for the purpose of the Department of Justice has a standing rule against prosecuting any sitting president for any crime. So in light of that, everything's going to wind down, and the DC case and the Florida case will be dismissed. The Florida case is currently on appeal. I anticipate that appeal will be withdrawn, and both of those cases will be functionally moot by the end of the year.
Brett, as you said, the New York case is a state case, and you and I have talked about, you know, these cases, because I believe the New York one was the first one that, obviously, it was the first one to actually go to court. And Judge Marchant is moving this to next week. I mean, in theory, could he hold off sentencing until 2029?
Yes, in theory, he could. All right, that's one of the options. Now, if he were to exercise that option, then at this point, it would be like frozen in amber, like the mosquitoes in Jurassic Park. It would simply be frozen for a period of time while Donald Trump is president, and then could theoretically resume thereafter. However, there's and of course, we're in completely uncharted territory here, Joe. No, we've never faced this before. And if this were to happen, the Trump team could ask for a dismissal for failure to prosecute. They could, in essence, say you can't prosecute Donald Trump because he's sitting president, and because you can't, you must dismiss. Frankly, the outcome that I would like to see is simply for Judge Marchant to issue a final order. And by doing that, then the appeals could move forward, because I've previously identified multiple layers of judicial error in this case against Trump. That even in New York, even in the state of New York, would be overturned. And we know that because even the Henry Weinstein case, or the Harvey Weinstein case, was overturned in part on appeal in New York for much the same grounds, but with what's called cumulative evidence, as was done in Trump's trial when it came to allowing Stormy Daniels to testify. So on that basis alone, I'm very confident that the appellate courts would overturn everything, even in the state of New York.
All right. So the good thing, Brad, I guess, for America is that these cases are all winding down, and we can get on with the second Trump term in about 2 months. Now, locally, or semi-locally, over in Illinois, a federal judge enjoins enforcement of Illinois assault ban. U.S. District Judge Stephen McGlynn says the law bans firearms covered by the Second Amendment and is not supported by historical precedent. For people like me who need breaking down of what that means, Brad, what can you tell us about this case?
Well, that's language that was initially used way back in 2008 by Justice Scalia in the now famous case of Heller versus D.C. And in that case, Justice Scalia said that the understanding of the Second Amendment means that it's not just for armies, it's not just for the National Guard, but it also encompasses a defense of a person, of an individual, and a defense of their home. And this defense includes pistols, includes all types of pistols or handheld weapons. But it didn't go so far as stating that the AR-style weapons were included in that. So that's back in Heller. So what Judge McGlynn here did was, I think he extrapolated very logically and stated that this ban, or the ban, is unconstitutional under Heller because essentially these weapons are the exact same type of weapons. Now, the Illinois rhetoric has been that the weapons ban in Illinois is only for what's called, quote, weapons of war, unquote. But that's patently false. The weapons covered under the weapons ban are semi-automatic weapons, and weapons of war are fully automatic weapons, which have been illegal under federal law since 1986. So a semi-automatic weapon cannot be classified as a weapon of war. And conversely, Heller dealt with pistols, And pistols, semi-automatic pistols, are weapons of war. Every soldier carries a pistol. So if weapons of war, meaning pistols, pass constitutional muster under the Second Amendment, per the Supreme Court in Heller, then it would clearly apply to any semi-automatic weapons. So eventually, even though I think the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals will reverse Judge McGlynn's hold or stay on this because it's very liberal district, if this goes to the Supreme Court, I have no doubt that the Supreme Court would find the Illinois ban to be unconstitutional.
This sounds like the type of thing that will find its way to the Supreme Court, right?
It could, but then again, it may not, because there's currently a case already going to the Supreme Court in this term by the end of 2025 dealing with this exact same issue, but from a different state in a different district. So if the Supreme Court rules in a different case in 2025 that a state cannot ban semi-automatic weapons, then that will effectively apply to the current Illinois ban, again, making it moot and finding it to be unconstitutional.
Interesting. Brad, I want to go back federal real quick. We talked about Trump's legal problems personally, but when he gets to the White House, no doubt that there's going to be legal challenges to his plan for mass deportation. What kind of legal stalling can be done when it comes to something like this?
Well, you're going to find legal challenges mostly in blue states. The left and the mainstream media, now, of course, I'm being redundant, have been saying that the Republicans and the conservatives have been cherry picking judges in federal courts in Texas to get the decisions they want. Now we're going to see the left do that exact same tactic. So you'll see judges in states probably like Massachusetts even. I know they're nowhere near the border, but they may say and hold that any deportation is invalid because of a misapplication of federal law and regulations. That would put a hold on things. It would require a lot of appeals. And I foresee any attempt at deportation to make at least one, if not more than one, trips to the Supreme Court, because these cases will primarily be brought in liberal districts, which means even a court of appeals could find in favor of holding or stopping any deportation, which would require the Supreme Court to unravel it.
Oh, well, I'm sure they're ready at Court TV, Brad, for the next few years to cover this.
Well, you know what? As my wife always likes to say, it's always good when the lawyers get paid.
That's right. And you know what? I'm glad you said that, Brad, because I want your thoughts on a case that you and I think talked about last time we spoke. It's about this case in Massachusetts where a man bought a $70,000 engagement ring. Okay, I mean, way too much for me. But a $70,000 engagement ring, and the wedding was called off. Now he went to court. One court said that it was a gift; she gets to keep it. Another said that no, it's his. Well, it went to the Court of Appeals in Massachusetts, and the new law in Massachusetts is whoever purchased the ring gets to keep the ring if the wedding doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Brad, legally, what do you think of this ruling?
Well, you know, this is actually something, it's not new. It's gone back to law school. When I was in law school, we talked about these kinds of cases. But the Massachusetts Supreme Court rendered a decision just today that the $70,000 engagement ring has to be returned after the canceled wedding, because for two reasons. Number one, the man bought it, all right? And the man bought it. It was an implied contract saying this ring is yours, assuming that you move forward with the wedding. And so by canceling the wedding, the woman canceled the contract. And by failing to perform under the terms of a marriage proposal contract, then the ring reverted to the purchaser. It's very simple contract law, actually. It's I'm giving you this in exchange for you marrying me. And if you don't marry me, that voids the contract and I get the ring back. It's not that complicated.
That's, you know, Brad, this has been a topic on my 9 o'clock show in Buffalo. I know that's a great promo for it. This has been a topic and me and my co-host disagree. And I've been saying exactly what you say. When I proposed to my wife, if that wedding didn't happen, the ring wasn't $70,000, but I would want the ring back. And I'm glad we agree on. I'm glad me and the law agree on that, because it is a contract. That's why you don't propose on her birthday or on Christmas, because then it could be construed
as a gift as opposed to consideration for a contract. That's absolutely right, Joe. You got it.
Oh, Brad, always great catching up with you. Look forward to talking to you again. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too, my friend. Talk to you soon.
Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. Hope you're having a great Tuesday. Tuesday's kind of that blah day. You know what I mean? It's, you don't know what you're going to get. It's not Monday. You didn't just get out of the weekend. But it's also not, you know, close enough to the next weekend. It's kind of just a blah day. And hopefully we're helping you get through the blah of the week. I got to tell you. So today, a big part of the show in Buffalo, we were talking about the continued meltdowns, as I said in my monologue, from the left and on cable news and on TikTok and everything. It's mind-boggling that people actually film their meltdowns. They will tell you and show you them cutting their hair and think, this is a reasonable way. I'm going to shave off all my hair. That's a reasonable way to react to the presidential election. It's madness. It's absolute madness. But we were talking about that. And the, as I said in my monologue, just the continued, hey, the controversial, you know, Trump wants to have mass deportations and this controversial policy, but it's not a controversial policy. If more than half of the American people who went to the polls last week, a week ago today, said that they're sick of the way things are right now, and they want to go forward and go back to, let's be honest, the first 3 years of the Trump presidency, COVID, we'll all just, I think everyone made mistakes during the COVID year, but, you know, 17 to 19 were pretty good. People have more fond memories. Trump's approval rating is the highest it's ever been, thanks to Joe Biden. And I think it's just being completely ignored by the mainstream media when you have John Dickerson going on Stephen Colbert's show and crying, how am I going to tell my son about the election? Meanwhile, I'm supposed to the next day turn on CBS and trust this man to give me fair coverage for the next 4 years? I mean, how have we gotten to this point? Now, I know you tune in to 97.1. You're expecting my opinion, right? I'm giving you my view of the day's news. I am an opinion host. I am not a newsman. Now, I can go into being the newsman if there's a breaking story and we have to bring the news. Of course, you know, I worked our election coverage here at WBEN in Buffalo. That was a little bit of commentary with a little bit of news, right? But, you know, John Dickerson, you don't turn on, I don't even know what CBS show he's on. I think he's on the morning show on CBS that no one watches. Like, people turn that on and they expect fair coverage. You know, there are still millions of people in this country that don't have cable. Actually, more and more people are getting rid of cable. They're realizing, oh, I can get 50 channels digitally, and then I can just kind of a la carte get everything else I want. So you do have people that, hey, this is the live programming they get. This might be the only news. They watch their local news followed by the CBS news or the ABC news. And or the NBC news. Sorry, NBC. And now I'm supposed to see, I see John Dickerson crying with Stephen Colbert. Well, what's his news coverage going to be like for the next 4 years? I don't know. I just, it's been an interesting week. It's been a very interesting week since Trump was reelected, and the meltdowns, not only in the media, but on social media, And then just being reminded that late night television is no longer funny. Remember when late night, I remember when I was a kid, you know, my parents put a TV in my room. They probably gave me a TV when I was way too young, but I had a TV in my room and I loved watching Letterman and Leno and Conan. Craig Ferguson, I thought was hilarious. But now, I mean, all I'm seeing, I see Jimmy Kimmel's crying. I told you, John Dickerson's crying over on Colbert Show. I don't know. Jimmy Fallon, I don't know what the heck he's doing. You know, Seth Meyers is talking about the discussion he had with his children. And I just go back. Could you imagine Jay Leno in 96? How am I going to explain to my children the Clinton Dole election? I mean, that would be an absolute snooze fest. I stayed up through must-see Thursday to watch Jay Leno cry about the election. No one would have put up with that. And now it's just like completely accepted that we don't have Johnny Carson anymore. We don't have David Letterman anymore. We have political activists pretending to be late night show hosts. Hey, if that's what you want, fine. Guess what? CNN's on to midnight. MSNBC's on to midnight. But, you know, I think most of us at some point in our day want an escape from reality, right? We want to watch Will on Wheel of Fortune make the most absurd guesses on the puzzle. We want to watch the Sabres and the Blues Thursday night on ESPN Plus. Like, we want this escape from reality. And it used to be the late night shows would give you a quick look, a monologue, making fun of the day's events. Hey, welcome back. Sorry about that. We must have had a disconnection. I was talking about Thanksgiving, and there's this big push now that from people on the left not to invite your Trump voting family members to Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, and it's absurd. And I thought, okay, this is being a little played up for the television. But we had a listener call in to my show in Buffalo this afternoon. And she said that her niece has asked her through her sister, called her and said, you know, we just don't think it would be right for you to be around us on Thanksgiving. You know, we're healing and we don't want you to interrupt our Thanksgiving. I mean, are you kidding me? These are supposedly family members, people you love. I have family that did not vote like me. Still love them. I have friends who didn't vote like me. Come on, I'm a millennial conservative in New York State. I've got a lot of friends that didn't vote like me. I would never not want their company unless all they're going to do is talk politics. Right? I'll tell you, I'm not going to bring up politics if you don't bring up politics. I think that should be the rule for everyone this Thanksgiving. Now, if someone brings it up, that's the key. Let's go. But I'm not going to walk in and say, hey, how about that election? I guess some people are expecting it. I don't know. But for me, that's a little much. Hey, we're not going to have family Thanksgiving this year because Aunt Jackie voted for Trump and we're not going to her house. So that's the continued meltdown that you see, and I don't think we're going to see an end to it. I think we're going to see this for 4 years. You've got women out there with the 4B movement. You know, they're not going to date. They're not going to get married. They're not going to have kids. They're not going to have sex. I guess the last two kind of go together. For 4 years, that's their way of getting back at men for voting for Trump. I mean, that's delusional. You know, I mean, 4 years ago, yeah. Trump didn't get reelected. Biden won. We had COVID. Still went to work the next day. I didn't get on TikTok and shave my hair. I didn't have a freak out in the driver's seat of my car in a Lowe's parking lot. I just went on with my life. I don't know. I mean, are people doing this for clicks? I'm not sure what it is. And again, I go back to, even if I was freaking out like that, say that was my reaction to something, okay? Say I came home after work today, my wife said we're getting a divorce, and, you know, I had a meltdown. The last thing I would do is pick up my phone and have the meltdown into my camera. Like, and this is coming from a millennial who, you know, I mean, social media, you know, came on towards the end of my high school career. I had it for college. I've had it for my entire adult life. The last thing I would think of doing is filming a meltdown and then making sure I shared it to all my social media outlets. I just don't get that line of thinking. I mean, do people think you care? Like, I know no one cares. Well, hey, that doesn't sound right as a radio host, but you get what I'm saying. I realize that people don't want to take in my meltdown. Or maybe they do. Maybe I'm the one who's wrong here. And for me personally, I did have a friend Wednesday morning. You know, I did election coverage here in Buffalo until 3 a.m. So I went to bed. I woke up. A friend had commented on my Instagram story that had, you know, President Trump elected 47th president and the American flag. And they messaged me and said, I'm just very disappointed in you. And so I just didn't say anything back because why would I fuel that fire? You know what I mean? I'm just let them sit on that. I'm hoping they come to their senses and say, sorry, I was emotional. But that was all. That's the only reaction I've gotten aimed at me. That and someone said, I've unfollowed all my Trump supporting friends except for you. I go, okay, well, at least I know I'm entertaining. Hey, when we come back, we'll have Sue's News and Thomas Frank. He has written an opinion piece in the New York Times. The elites had it coming. It was the guest essay in the November 9th issue of the New York Times. And we'll talk to him after Sue's News. And all of that is after the news here on 97.1 FM Talk. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon. Back after this.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hi, I'm John Meacham, the host of Cadence 13's new podcast, Fate of Fact, on how America and its political parties got to where we are today. Available now on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.